to our audio presentation, Heaven, the Real World. I also want to take a few minutes to thank those of you who have emailed us. We really do appreciate these emails. They are very encouraging, and we ask that you would continue that. If you are a believer, if you are really walking with the Lord, what we're going to be talking about today is your promised inheritance. It's what your future holds for you. It's the real world. If you are a non-believer, I want you to consider this presentation carefully to see if it's something that you might also want to be part of. Edward blinked several times and stared at the doctor. His mind was searching, grasping, as his emotions churned inside of him. How should I feel? Edward thought to himself as a variety of emotions caused him to shift several times in his chair. The doctor continued, I have seen cancer like this, and honestly, I don't think you can expect to live more than several months. I'm sorry. At a moment like this, we can picture ourselves sitting there in the chair in the doctor's office, and we can feel that our whole world was caving in on us. It's a stunning blow. In fact, it takes a while to really comprehend what it's all about. But one thing is for sure. We find out very quickly that life is fragile, that life on earth is unpredictable in many ways, that much of the control that we have in life is really more an illusion than a reality. Life is bigger than us. We must come to terms with that, or we will be very disillusioned and go through many hurtful, despairing situations. Life is bigger than us, and what we need in life is something that is bigger than it. We need something bigger than life, something that takes in all the possibilities, that can deal with the unpredictable, and can give us a vision for life after death. Our thinking is similar to a spotlight in the clear night air. You know how it lights up a small spot, and as we move it around that spotlight, we only see what's in the circle of light. Everything outside of that circle of light is just wrapped in darkness, and it's, we just don't see it, you know. So as we move this spotlight along, maybe we would come to an oak tree and there's a squirrel up there munching quietly, contently on an old nut, and we may have a feeling of a peace, you know, being at nature, with nature, and seeing a very passive part of nature. And we may swing it a little further, and we keep moving. And as the spotlight moves, we illuminate different things. And whatever we illuminate, we focus on and we begin to think about. Let's say we come to a tree, and the tree is shaking, and it draws our attention. And as we study this tree, a tiger drops out of the tree and comes charging towards us. How does that make us feel? We run, we're panicky, you know, we have a jolt of energy and we have new energy for our feet, and we really pick them up and put them down, trying to get away. My point here is whatever is in that beam of light has a tremendous effect on how we feel and how we choose to act. And our mental focus is very similar to this. It's kind of like a beam of light, only in this case, we're beaming in our ability to think and to reason and to analyze things. Our cognitive mechanisms are at play. But you know, we don't see a lot of things around us. If you've ever been in a room, there's many times you miss so much that's in that room. You only really see what you're kind of focusing on. If someone drops a glass, we may quickly look over to see that and miss everything else that's going on in the room at that time. All we're thinking about is that broken glass. We may be feeling sorry for the person. We may be feeling angry that they were so clumsy. It's hard to say, but whatever we were feeling at that point was based on what we were focusing on, the individual that broke that glass. We can focus inwardly very easily. We might have been hurt, someone might have said something that really hurt our feelings, and inside it just absorbs us and we just turn inward. And we think about that. We try to analyze why they would do that to us, or what their motivation was, or what our feelings are, and why we're hurting, and so on. And we may miss someone that has just walked up and give us a tremendous compliment. We may miss it all because our focus is inward. We may even miss the shutters that are rattling because of the wind outside. The point here, whatever we focus on has a great deal to do with how we feel and then choose to act. One old philosopher many thousands of years ago said a very profound thing. He said, "It is not so much what happens to us in life, it's how we interpret what happens to us. It's how we, when we focus on it, how we interpret that." Okay? So he went one step further than our focus. Our focus, we only can focus on a certain amount of things at one time. It has a profound effect on our life. And how we interpret what we focus on also has a profound effect on our life. Let's suppose that you're in the fall of the year, you're busy with your life, and all of a sudden you hear your favorite Christmas carol, the first one of the year that you've heard. And it may stop you right in your tracks if you focus on it. It may stop you right on your tracks, and you begin to think of all the different Christmases and all the different things that happened to you in the past. And if you had pleasant Christmases, like myself, Mom always made us taffy apples. She really went all out on our Christmas. We didn't get a lot of gifts, but she went all out. We felt a lot of love and warm feelings, and they all come flooding back. But if you have been mistreated in life, it might be that you have a poor feeling. You might have bad feelings, conflicting feelings about Christmas, or if you've lost a loved one recently, or something like this here, where you're going to have to be alone this Christmas, it might bring in, you know, some very negative feelings for you. But the point I'm trying to make is this here. What we focus on, our thinking, and how we interpret that has a profound effect on how we feel and how we choose to act. If we focus entirely on our life here on earth, we have a very limited focus. It's not really the whole picture about our existence. It doesn't cover eternity. It covers only a small portion of our existence, our life here on earth. It's a very limited point of view. It can be self-defeating at times, because if we focus only on this life and the events that happen to us, we are very vulnerable to what happens to us, and especially the unexpected. Many times the unexpected leaves us floundering and unable to cope and get a handle on life and find something stable to stand on. We emotionally, we drift and we struggle, and we go from one emotion to the other as our moods change. We feel fear and anxiety. It's not that life is always like that. We have times, all of us, of joy, or we should have times where we enjoy life. But if our life, if our focus is only on this life, we're going to have a great deal of trouble. For one thing, no one's going to get off this planet alive. And as we age, as we get older, if we live that long, as we get older, we begin to look ahead and we begin to see, are we going to be able to keep our mental facilities? You know, are we physically, are we going to be able to deal with the aches and the pains and the wearing out of this body that we live in? Are we going to be able to deal with that well? How about maybe a stay in the nursing home? The loss of our independence, the ability to... My father has a problem with the idea that he couldn't drive. It's not so much the driving, it's the loss of independence. As we look down the road, we can see that, and it can bring a lot of negative emotions into our life, and it has a real effect on how we live today. Now, it shouldn't, but it does. Whatever we focus on and how we interpret it, we know has an effect on how we feel now and how we choose to act at this moment. Wearing out, if that's the only focus we have, can be a very discouraging, despairing thing. What we need is we need a bigger focus than this here. We need to look at a bigger view of our existence. Because if we don't, we're not looking at the truth. We simply are missing the truth. It's interesting how we misinterpret that. We think that the truth is more being realistic in this life and looking at this life. And it's true that we should live in reality. But reality is bigger than this life. Reality goes on forever. If we are born again, we have a great view of eternity. We have a view that we can embrace wholeheartedly because it talks of a time when there will be no tears, there will be no fear, there will be no conflicting emotions. There will be none of these things. They will pass away. There's a new reality, a new existence coming for those of us that are born again Christians. So the bigger our view is, the longer it goes, the more accurate it becomes, the more realistic and the more truthful it is. It is more truthful to focus beyond our life and this life and beyond this life than it is to look at just simply this life or simply eternity. We have to live in both of them. That's where our existence is, in both of them. Too small of a focus leaves us very vulnerable, and we can really be hurt much more by the events of life than we would if we had a true eternal focus. It's kind of like this here. If we go out into a hurricane out in the ocean, out in the Atlantic Ocean, and the waves get just huge, you know, and they're churning into that green-black color that's really terrifies people, and there's foam all over the place. And if we were out in the middle of this chaotic scene, it would be a very despairing thing. And you know, it's kind of like if we focus on just life on earth, at times that's just where we end up. We end up on those rocky, wind-blown oceans. But if we have an eternal perspective, it's like like a submarine that goes down under the waves, down into the quiet depth of the ocean. A hurricane is raging above, but everything is still and peaceful far down, no longer tossed around like the waves with every wind change that there is. Therefore, if we are going to have a vision, a perspective that takes us beyond the waves of this life, so to speak, that gives us a certain amount of peace and helps us to be able to feel and act in this world in the best possible way, we're going to have to come up with a bigger view, an eternal view. The problem with this is it lies beyond our finest efforts to imagine. It is simply just we don't have the tools to be able to describe it properly. Should we give up? Not at all. It's very important that we learn to focus on eternity, even though we don't do it 100% correct. Again, the problem with eternity, to describe in paradise, is that it's beyond our vocabulary. Let's think about a man that was born blind and deaf. And your project is to be able to take him to a beautiful setting, a beautiful park somewhere, and have a band there, an orchestra, that is going to play some beautiful music. Now, I like beautiful music, and I'm not saying that it's the only kind of music in this world that should turn a person on or reduce stress. I think we all are kind of imprinted with the music of our generation, but to me, beautiful music has a stirring effect, and I would love to be able to explain this to somebody that was blind and deaf. How would I explain it, though? I mean, how would I explain the beautiful setting, the birds singing? How would I explain strings of an instrument that are made of the right composition, and if they're strung over a wooden frame properly, that they make notes when you move them? And when you have more than one string and you make more than one note, it turns into music, beautiful music. How could I ever explain this to them? How could I ever get this concept across to him? How could I tell him how much it stirs me and the peace I feel and the gratitude and joy many times that beautiful music stirs inside of me? How could I convey the feelings to him? I don't know that I really ever could. I don't know that it's even possible to be able to do this. And so it is in trying to describe heaven. That's one of the handicaps we have. There were several people that have went to heaven and come back to tell us, have lived to tell the story to us. One of them was Apostle Paul in the New Testament of the Bible. And in several places he tried to convey to us or to his audience in those days, those who he was writing to, the ancient Christians, a little bit about it. Like in 1 Corinthians 2:9, "However, as it is written, no eye has seen, no ear has heard, no mind has conceived what God has prepared for those who love him." And again, in 2 Corinthians 12, 2-4, "I know a man in Christ who 14 years ago, whether in the body or out of the body, I do not know, God knows, was caught up to the third heaven. And I know that this man, whether in the body or away from the body, I do not know, God knows, was caught up into paradise, and he heard utterances beyond the power of man to put into words, which man is not permitted to utter." Of course, many think that it was Paul himself that was taken into what he calls the third heaven and the paradise, into eternity. Jesus Christ, when he was on earth, also gave us several insights about his home, heaven. In John 14, 2 and 3, "In my Father's house there are many dwelling places. If it were not so, I would have told you, for I am going away to prepare a place for you. And when I go and make ready a place for you, I will come back again and will take you to myself, that where I am, you may be also." He was using an analogy from his culture, the ancient Hebrew culture. In the ancient culture, when a man wanted to marry a woman, he would go through his parents. I don't remember exactly how it all transpired, but eventually they would become engaged. And then he would tell his bride that he's going to go back to his father's home. It's called an insula. And he's going to build another room onto that home. And then when it's done and the father tells him when to go, he'll come back to get her. Ray Vanderdun, in his book, Echoes of His Presence, gives us a little bit of insight into this cultural ritual that they had that Christ actually used as the basis of his story. Michael's heart pounded with exertion and excitement. Each stone he lifted and set in place brought him closer to the day he would bring Elizabeth, his bride, home. As the youngest son, Michael had watched his four brothers marry and bring their wives to his father's home. And before their wedding, each of these brothers had done what Michael was now doing, adding his own living quarters to their many rooms that already surrounded the large courtyard. "Elizabeth," he thought, "I'm glad I'm bringing her to this insula, to this large, loving family. I wonder if she'll love them as much as I do." Michael thought of the many hours he'd spent in the courtyard with his brothers and their wives, his sisters, his parents, his aunts and uncles, his cousins, his nephews and nieces. His family's insula complex was one of the largest in the area. Their family community now numbered more than 120. And I think what Christ was saying here is that those of us that know him, that are his bride, that are committed to him, he will take us all home as somewhat like a family. We'll all be together there in God the Father's insula. We have another insight from the Apostle John as he was imprisoned on an island, banished to an island because of his faith, and he saw a heaven open up. He saw a vision in Revelation, the last book of the Bible. He describes many of the things that he saw. In Revelation 21:4, he says, "God will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more. Neither shall there be anguish, sorrow, and mourning, nor grief, nor pain, any more." for the old conditions, the former order of things, has passed away. And again in 22:5, there will be no night. They will not need the light of a lamp or the light of the sun, for the Lord God will give them light, and they will reign forever and ever. So with the insights that we're having here is that if we really want to see our existence truthfully, we have to include this eternal perception, this eternal focus. And if we do, we will find that life here on earth will take its very best form for us, will be the very best that life can offer, even though it will have many joys and many pain and all the other things that we go through in life. And as we approach death, we will know that this is not the end, that there is a whole new thing waiting out there, and it is an existence that is so good that we can't even begin to picture it. Since it is so important that we have some type of eternal perspective, and knowing that we cannot get it exactly right, but realizing that it still doesn't matter if it's completely correct, as long as we make an attempt to get as close to the truth of reality, of eternity, as we can. How can we do that? Well, let's take a journey with a man named Ryan, and let's see if we can glean a little bit more about the unknown. The room was large, perhaps a quarter of a mile square. It had high ceilings, marble flooring, and walls. It was a beautiful room, large enough to make Ryan feel small, but surprisingly warm and comfortable. There were bookshelves on every wall, all the way to the high ceiling. Ryan tried to imagine how many books could be stored in this spacious room, too many for quick analysis. As his eyes moved to the wall near the entrance, he saw that there were a number of volumes of loose-bound books, perhaps 2 to 3 inches thick. Though there were several thousand of these volumes, they only took up a very small amount of bookshelf, due to the enormous size of the room. He scanned the rest of the room and again wondered how many of these books it would take to fill all the shelves in this immense room. As Ryan walked over to the shelf area that contained the books, he noticed a plaque over the doorway with the words Edward Smith carved in it. Was this whole room designed for millions of volumes built only for Edward Smith? Ryan scanned the books in the shelves and stopped about halfway through. He estimated that he was near the 1,000th volume. He withdrew this book from the shelf and began reading. "God is such a marvelous creature," Edward said. "He has constantly created and given us opportunities to be involved in his work. A number of those in our insula traveled to the new universe he just finished. Though it is not as beautiful as our home, it is a real improvement over the universe that we once lived in. Sue and I tried to remember how many Earth years ago that we lived on Earth and decided that it was at least 1 trillion. The feelings of love, joy, and contentment that we feel here is still overwhelming. I couldn't believe at first that these feelings in this life could last. But its beauties and wonders are fresh, new, deeply nourishing at every moment. It has never diminished and never grows old, nor do I ever take it for granted. We have all been assigned a part in this new creation, and it is so fulfilling to see God's Spirit working in us and helping and supporting us. We never seem to grow weary. We are always at peace and have never felt anxiety, discouragement, or conflict. Even as I write, I feel a great gratitude and love for God. He has given us something we could never have earned. His generosity is limitless. How can we not love and trust Him with all of our heart?" Ryan replaced the book and looked back at the first volume. It was thin and drew his attention. Walking over to this book, Ryan carefully lifted it off the shelf and was surprised to find it contained only a few pages. The other volumes after it contained hundreds, perhaps thousands of pages each. The first page had the simple heading, "Edward's Life on Earth," and the dates 10/19/1920 to 3/16/2006. "I was born in Peoria, Illinois," Edward began, and it continued to describe his childhood and adolescence. It sounded familiar with the struggles and the good times, the pain, the confusion, and the successes of life on Earth. "As I approached 60, continued Edward, I experienced a serious illness and began to face the fact that I was beginning to wear out. For the first time in my life, I began to seriously consider that I would die and age and die. At first, this filled me with apprehension. What would it be like to really grow old? Would I be able to take care of myself and maintain some kind of independence? How and when would I die? As I rolled these thoughts around in my mind, I was drawn closer to God. I found that if I focused exclusively on my life here on earth, I felt more apprehension, anxiety, and distress. But if I focused on the bigger picture of eternity, realizing that God had promised me a home in heaven, the distress would melt away. I was so thankful for my deep faith in God. It seemed that I was drawn closer to God as I continued to age. I made many mistakes, but each time repented of them and asked sincerely for forgiveness. He had always graciously forgiven me. I learned to be transparent before Him, fearing nothing from Him, while holding Him in great love and respect. Sue died when I was almost 80. This loss was the greatest of my life. We had been the best of friends as well as lovers throughout our years together. We didn't always see eye to eye, and there had been some arguments. But through it all, we had learned to work it out, and I missed her tremendously. The lonesomeness and shock of losing Sue was tempered by God's promise that in our Christian faith, we would somehow see each other again. Our relationship would be different in heaven, but the Bible seemed to promise that we would have even a closer relationship than we had here on earth. I continually focused on the big picture, and it seemed to counteract the dark thoughts and problems associated with the aging process. In fact, I found a real desire to finish this life well, to stay involved in God's service to the end. With an eternal perspective, I found that I could get beyond my own problems and see and be more responsive to the problems others faced. I had more time to be useful in the Lord's service and found meaning and purpose in following His leading. I learned to love and trust my God more as time passed, and at moments had glimpses of those waiting for me in heaven. The doctor had been right in his assessment, since within several months I lay dying in bed, even as I suffered those last few weeks. Focusing on God's love and promise to me allowed me to keep a grateful attitude. As I spoke to my children, grandchildren, and friends, I knew each time could be the last. My concern for their salvation grew as I approached death. I encouraged them to love the Lord with all their heart and trust and serve Him all their days. I told them that I would look forward to seeing them again someday in heaven. The last perceptions I had of my life on earth were the tear-filled eyes of those around my bed. I wasn't sure what was going to happen next, but the feeling that everything was going to be all right grew stronger. Someone was holding my hand when I saw a light that drew me. As Ryan came to the end of the first volume, he gently closed it and placed it back on the shelf. His curiosity had been wet, and he reached for volume 2. The title was Paradise Found. For a moment there was silence, Edward continued, and then it seemed that I was on a grassy area with a gentle sloping hill in front of me. I decided that I must climb this small grassy rise if I was to see where I was. As I reached the top, I saw a huge number of people watching me. In the front was a brilliant white figure seated on a pure white horse. He rode towards me as the whole crowd suddenly raised their arms in a salute and a great shout. Then they moved towards me. The Lord dismounted, and He embraced me. He gave me a gold key and welcomed me home. How can I ever describe the love and warmth that overwhelmed me? Faces began to stand out of the approaching crowd. There was Sue in front with Mom and Dad, my brother Luke, Aunt Gladys, and other aunts and uncles, our local grocer Jim, and so many other friends and relatives. There were many others I didn't recognize, but they seemed eager to meet me also. Some of the individuals looked like something out of an old Bible storybook. There were smiles on Sue's and Mom's and Dad's faces as they reached me and gave me a long, warm embrace. Sue took my hand, and with Mom and Dad at each side, she said, "Welcome to this wonderful place. Let me introduce you to everyone and show you just how marvelous it really is." The colors were so vivid. Everything was so flawlessly beautiful. I felt so welcomed, so appreciated, so loved and accepted, and so at peace. My cup was so full there was simply no room for any more goodness and joy in it. For the first time in my existence, I was completely satisfied. I blinked several times to make sure this was all true. Could my cup always be this full and overflowing? Could it last? Then, with warm and enthusiastic anticipation, and with a deep sense of contentment and appreciation, I walked on with those I loved.